CBS Sports Basketball Podcast. I am your host, Matt Moore. On the line with me right now is James Herbert at Outside the NBA. He may be outside the NBA, but he's inside Boston, where the Celtics put up a valiant fight in Game 1 versus the Cleveland Cavaliers. They just give really great effort. Boy, did they try hard. We'll get to that later, but what we're going to talk about today are all NBA teams. We're going to recap the lottery and talk about that a little bit, and then we'll talk about conference finals. Let's get started. The all NBA teams came out on Thursday when we're recording this. They've been out only for a couple of hours. We're still acquainting ourselves with what happened there. Some interesting choices, I think, overall. I think probably the biggest story of them is Chris Paul being excluded entirely. That was a shock for most people, especially with DeMar DeRozan making it. DeMar DeRozan did make history. He did become the first all NBA selection to go 0-for-8 in a playoff game. Just a really
is that true?
No, I don't know.
I don't think that's. I mean, it might be. But I don't know.
Is there a way to search for that? We need CBS Sports Stats and Info, which is a thing that doesn't exist, to get on and find that out for us. I think the selections overall. I used to get mad at these things. I've made a kind of a vow to not get as mad at them. It's harder for me to get mad at them when I'm a voter now, too. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense for me to get as mad. It's like, well, I did what I could, right? Like, I voted what I thought was appropriate. The obvious ones at the top, you know, LeBron, Harden, Westbrook, Leonard, those guys were always going to make All-NBA. The surprise there is that Leonard, four people did not vote for him for All-NBA first team. One person did not vote for Westbrook first team. One person did not vote for LeBron first team. James Harden is the only player to get all 100 first team All-NBA votes. I'm not sure. Like, I've double checked like four times to make sure that I didn't screw up something and just forget. I did not. Luckily,
that's a pretty good sign for Harden's MVP candidacy, don't you think?
I would say so, but I based off of, you know, the Dream Shake, which is a Rockets blog, actually went through and started tracking who voted for what, the voters and what they voted for. It looks very much like Westbrook. Like, it just, the indications look very much like Westbrook. Anthony Davis got first team All NBA. I went Rudy Gobert. Is Davis a better player than Gobert? Sure. Gobert, I thought he contributed more to a winning team and was more pivotal to a team's success from a playoff standpoint. And so it's not that I think that Anthony Davis is not as good as Rudy Gobert. That's obviously not true. But I did think that Rudy Gobert was deserving of first-team All-NBA. Particularly just with how bad the Pelicans were, that stuff does factor into these things with me. It's the same reason DeMarcus Cousins did not get a vote for me. Winning, I think you have to set a bar of, your team has to have some success. There are outliers, sure, but Davis did not cross what I would have considered to be an important enough outlier.
So if the Heat had made the playoffs, then Dion Waiters would have made your second team. But they just didn't win enough.
Probably not. Because Waiters missed a lot of time, right?
Okay.
But
yeah, he missed some time, like crucial time at the end of the year.
I do have him high on my top 40 NBA free agents. I was very, very complimentary of Waiters today in top 40 free agents. I basically said, like, look, he says ridiculous things. Yes, he has this persona that's kind of known. But the reality is that he's, like, a really good player. I basically compared it to, like, he's a Gunner Sean Marion. Like, that's what I think Dion Waiters is at this point. He's really versatile. He's able to do multiple things, and he comes up big in situations, and he helps you win. Like, Dion Waiters in Oklahoma City became a guy that helps you win. Why are we talking about Dion Waiters? We're talking about All-NBA. But anyway, I don't have a problem with Davis.
You should always talk about Dion Waiters, Matt.
I don't have a problem with Anthony Davis making first-team All-NBA. That's fine. Rudy made second. The gap was very narrow. Davis got 45 first-place votes. Gobert got 43. The gap was only a 4-point differential between Davis and Gobert, so it shows you that the voters were really kind of split. Curry obviously gets second team All-NBA. Somebody voted him first team. I guess if you're just going to go off of, like, team success, I can't.
I think there are good arguments for Curry to be on the first team. I didn't do it personally, but like, I could
really
see it.
If you just really hate the triple double thing with Westbrook, I guess it's a protest vote, and that's fine.
Well, and if you look at, like, if the question is, like, who makes his team, like, better than most? Like, who has, like, such an impact on winning? And then you look at his, like, plus-minus stats, and it's just nuts.
Yeah.
Like, he is the engine of that team more so than anybody else, and that team was
the best. That I don't agree with. Curry was the engine for about a month and a half this season. The rest of the time, it was Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant was the engine of that team for most of the season. Curry was the engine from after Christmas through about the end of January, and then that stopped again for a while, and then it started again when KD got hurt, and then that carried through the end of the season. But, like, overall, the engine was still Kevin Durant, and in large part just the offense. I didn't think that Curry was... Like, Curry wasn't as magical this season as in years prior, and everyone talked about that, and that's, in large part, like, that's why, is because he wasn't just, like, doing everything and opening everything else up, and that's why I gave him a second-place vote, because he's still extremely valuable, he still contributes, he still hits many threes, which is why we talk about him in this context, but, you know, I don't think he was the engine. Durant got second place. Well, what?
I guess the reason I'm saying engine is, like, obviously, like, Durant had an incredible, like, efficient as hell, unbelievable season if he had stayed healthy the whole time. Like, we talked about it throughout the year. Like, he should have been in the MVP race too. But I think when talking about the Warriors, like, if you look at when those guys are split up, like, the Curry and the bench lineups were still, like, nuts. And the Durant and the bench lineups were not quite the same. And I think it was important that halfway through the year, or not even halfway, like a couple of months through the year, they basically figured out as a team that Curry, like, when they're at their best, Curry's usage rate is high. Like, Curry is the guy that should be the engine. And I think even Durant has kind of acknowledged that and said that. So that's what I meant. Not if you're just looking at, like, pure production. Obviously, Durant was unbelievable, and those guys were kind of neck and neck. But the way I'm separating it is kind of like when the Warriors are at their best, that's like Curry is the guy that's doing the most. And I think Curry with the bench, like, regardless of, like, who's on the floor with him, like, they're still the Warriors. And they have not been as Warriors-y when it's like Durant and some other guys, if that makes sense.
Giannis Antetokounmpo landed second team. Totally worth it. He was on my squad as well. Isaiah Thomas was the other guard for second team. It was a pretty wide margin. Thomas got 236 votes or points total in the voting. John Wall only got 125. I voted John Wall second team and Isaiah third because I like defense. I think defense should matter. It doesn't always matter because I voted for James Harden and Russell Westbrook, but. And Steph Curry, as a matter of fact. But Isaiah Thomas, like, there were legitimately concerning defensive numbers throughout the season when it comes to Thomas. He is a weak point that is being, and you're seeing that throughout the playoffs, of him being exploited, and that matters. Also, I just thought the Wall's overall production, like, all contributed more points and in terms of points produced from assists and whatnot. And the Wizards, I think, would have been way, 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 way worse. With, like, Wall really is, like, everything to that team. Isaiah became everything to that team in that he does all the scoring. And because of the scoring, people double him, and so he gets assists, but it's just not the same. It's fine, though. I don't have any argument with Isaiah Thomas. Like, Isaiah Thomas is probably going to get fifth place on MVP, and that's fine, too. He had an incredible season. He made many shots. Like, Isaiah Thomas made many shots, just like Steph Curry hit many threes. And that's valuable in a game where the entire point is to put the ball in the bucket. So I got no problem with Thomas getting second place. Third team is where things get interesting, so as predictable. Wall makes third team, and most people would think that that's probably right. You, however, excluded John Wall entirely from this process when you had your picks, which you did not have an official vote, but on our
picks. Yeah, I mean, my votes don't matter. Yeah, but I didn't have. I had Lowry and Chris Paul.
Yeah,
and I think, like, the argument for Wall, if you're going to make it to me, is
he's
that he
awesome.
Just played more games and he played more minutes. But
and
I
he's
think
awesome,
when you
and
look
he
at
does everything and he's versatile, and the NBA in this league is all almost like is in large part about versatility, and that should matter.
Yeah, he's a great player. I didn't think he had as good of a season as Lowry or Paul. And I think the shooting issue, like, if you look at the efficiency, I mean, those guys are on a whole other level than John Wall was. And it's weird because it's like, yeah, I left him off. That doesn't mean I think he's bad. Like, he's incredible. And I think he is underrated by most people until these playoffs. But I just think the Lowry thing is interesting. Like, it's like... Everybody, the voters, overlooked that Durant missed 20 games, and he gets second team, right? And Lowry and Paul missed the same amount of games, and they weren't quite on Durant's level, but they were, like, a tier below that. If you look at their numbers, they were unbelievable. I don't think people kind of remember how great Kyle Lowry was for most of the season because he missed the end of it and he was bad in the playoffs. But this was a regular season award. He was like as close to like doing a full-on Chris Paul impression as you can be without dominating the ball as much and having as much usage and having as much assists. But in terms of his scoring, his like the three-point shooting that he had this year and just stepping into deep threes off the dribble the way he hadn't in years past, his efficiency, it was all there. And the Raptors had a really, really good regular season. And I think the Clippers, like, if you look at what they did with Paul on the court, like, they were great. They had some other issues, and they had depth issues as always. But I just thought those guys were both phenomenal, and that's not taking anything away from Wall. I just thought those two guys had slightly better seasons.
Kyle Lowry did not receive any votes at all for All-NBA.
None.
So Draymond Green was a tough one for me. I did not vote Draymond Green at all on any of the three teams.
I'm surprised.
Yeah, so here's how this breaks down. I voted him Defensive Player of the Year. I voted him all defense first team, obviously. He was right. I've caped for him for all defense all year. Like a large part of my Kawhi analysis in the regular season was built on one, how the Spurs might struggle defensively with Kawhi on the floor, and then two was built on look, Kawhi can only impact these things in this way. Look at what Draymond does. So I have a real appreciation for Draymond. I think he's a brilliant passer. He's the best passer on the Warriors. On a high passing team, he is the best passer, and it's not particularly close. Draymond Green is the best passer on the Warriors. Here's where I struggle. I value defense. I talk about it all the time. I talk about defense all the time, and I really value it. If you are exceptional defensively and good offensively, it is not as valuable as if you are exceptional offensively and good defensively. I don't necessarily like that, but it's true. And most players would tell you the same. Draymond Green shot 31% from three this season. 31% from three. He averaged 10 points per game. He wasn't asked to do more, and he would have had more opportunities had Durant not been there. And there are all these reasons to kind of look at Draymond and say what he does for them in all these other ways is more important, and I agree. But we knew this was going to happen with the Warriors. We knew that there was going to have to be guys whose impact was cut because of Kevin Durant arriving. And to me, that's where Draymond comes in, is that he wasn't impactful enough offensively for me to justify putting him over Jimmy Butler and Paul George, who to me were, like, those guys were everything to their squads. Those were two playoff teams, regardless of how you feel about them being quote-unquote playoff teams. They made the postseason almost entirely because of the performances of those two guys. They just carried their squads. Paul George put on some really impressive performances that most people didn't watch because they weren't watching random Pacers games late in the season. But I was. And I know how good Paul George is on both sides of the ball. He's efficient. He doesn't have to dominate the ball. Jimmy Butler does. But I also thought Jimmy Butler had a better season than Paul George. If I had to rank him, I would have put Butler on than Paul George. So that's what it came down to. I have a lot of respect for Draymond. That one was really tough for me. But I did wind up putting him off, and I put in Jimmy Butler and Paul George. So when Paul George does not get his money, you cannot blame me. And that was not a factor in my thinking, because you can't let it be a factor in your thinking. By the way, just so we're clear on this, I, like every other voter, do not want this decision to impact players' contracts. Like, what I think about a player's season should not decide whether or not they are eligible for more or less money. It's absurd. It's just an absurd element that we did not want or ask for or require or suggest. It was suggested by people that were not us, and a lot of us I think the voter panel took this thing pretty seriously, but it's not fair that Paul George is going to miss out on money because people like me didn't vote for him. That's ridiculous. It should be a relationship between him and his team.
All I heard was Draymond is a dirty player and a loudmouth and a product of the Warriors system, and he's not good, and you want to reward Paul George and give him lots of money for being good. That's all I heard from you.
Right, but I like the fact that Draymond's dirty. I loved Draymond as much as like any player on the planet. Like I just think he's like, he is, to me, he is the only vague reason why the Warriors are at all interesting is Draymond Green. He is fascinating, and I love criticizing him. Like, I criticize him for things he says. Like, I have a half written post about his comments about the media extrapolating what he said about Cleveland, because I'm just like, you do this all the time. You start something and then you're like, the media gonna twist everything I say. You do this. You know what you're doing. Be like Clay. We don't twist anything Clay says.
There's something about being like a singular character. Yeah. Like, there's nobody else who plays quite like Draymond Green. There's nobody else who talks quite like Draymond Green. I mean, whatever. Like, if he gets into coaching, it'll be awesome. If he gets into broadcasting, it'll be awesome. He already has a good podcast he does now. And I like, in an NBA that is like increasingly, I shouldn't say increasingly, because there are examples of the opposite, but in an NBA that is largely concerned about saying the right thing and image and all that stuff, Draymond is like just unabashedly who he is on the court, off the court, everything. And there's nobody on his team quite like him, and they love him for it. And it is sometimes it, as everybody knows, sometimes it can go the wrong direction. But like, the NBA is a far more interesting league with Draymond Green in it. And I know there are people who are listening to this, and there are people on Twitter, because anytime you say anything about Draymond, you hear them. There are people who just flatly don't like him. And he knows that, and he doesn't care, and I think that's great.
Oh, I disagree. I think he cares. I think he cares.
If he cares, I think he loves it. Like, he feeds off of that.
Yeah,
like,
he does. He does.
Yeah.
But he cares. Like the Warriors are – I don't think this is a bad thing. Okay, I'll say this. I'm a sensitive person. So when I say this, this is not coming from a judgmental place. It's okay. The Warriors are very sensitive. They are a very sensitive team. Like, some teams do not care. Like, the Spurs do not care what you say about them. Do not. Do not care. Do not care. The Warriors very much care.
And the Warriors are dialed in.
And they,
I guess what I meant by he doesn't care is, like, he's just like, sure, like, I welcome it, and I'm going to talk about it, and I'm going to fire back, and I don't, right. Like, yeah. It has to be, like, a really serious thing, like, when he got, like, directly talked out of commenting on the Zaza thing this week. That was, like, one of the rare instances where Golden State PR kind of shut a story down.
Yeah.
But in general, like, Draymond just feeds into everything.
Right. DeAndre Jordan got the last spot, the center spot on third team All-NBA. I don't have a problem with that. The vote was very close. I went Marc Gasol because Gasol was kind of a pillar for a team that did really well this season. I thought Gasol's defense was a step up from years past. Gasol had stretches where he wasn't great. I was very close to DeAndre Jordan in terms of voting for him. I was really close to doing that. Nikola Jokic was another guy. Karl Anthony Towns is another guy that I considered.
I went with Towns on my fake pick.
Yeah, so like there were a lot of good options there, and I don't think you can really say the one is definably better or worse than another one. The only real outrage is DeMar DeRozan made 13 All-NBA, and that's absurd.
You're really outraged?
Yeah, it's well, not.
It's your favorite player.
Not over Chris Paul. Come on, it's Chris Paul. Like, no, come on. It's Chris Paul.
Paul should have made it. Yeah. DeMar had a great year. Paul should have made it.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, DeMar DeRozan. First All-NBA selection ever to go 0-8 in a playoff game.
Don't think it's true.
Did he have the worst postseason of any All-NBA pick ever? I might argue he did.
I mean,
You should go back and look and find me a player that had a worse one.
I'm sure we could do it. James Harden had a pretty bad postseason. He was first team.
Man, he did. Well, he had a bad game six. I don't think that he was bad overall.
You know, he was 3-17 a few games before that.
Yeah, I think that, but he also does other things. Like, DeMar DeRozan only does one thing. He literally does one thing. Two things.
I mean, I would dispute that, but I don't want to relitigate DeMar DeRozan again.
We're going to be relitigating him forever, is what we're going to do.
Oh, God. No.
It's going to be also, I think it'll be really interesting next year if Lowry leaves, which is sounding more and like, I wouldn't say it's sounding more and more likely, but at least there's a lot of noise about the possibility of it. I'm not sold on that happening yet. I kind of think Masai will talk him into staying, but very interesting, I think, with that situation. So, that's all NBA.
A lot of things on the table there.
Let's talk lottery really quickly. The Boston Celtics get the number one pick. The Los Angeles Lakers, you know this. Everyone listening to this podcast knows what happened with the lottery. So, boring was kind of my result of this. Like, it's like, all right, the team with the number one pick got one, and the Lakers didn't lose their pick, and they're going to get Lonzo Ball, and the Sixers get third. which is fine.
Wouldn't it be really interesting if they didn't take Lonzo Ball?
Well, I will say that if you poke around the draft sites, people that talk to people that talk to people are like, there's a possibility it's not. You know, like, LeVar obviously thinks it's going to be. And Magic's obviously talked up Lonzo. But there's more than one
person. But couldn't, like, think about it. Think about it, like, Josh Jackson, Brandon Ingram, like, combination. Like, I just, I don't know. Like, Lonzo is going to be great, I think. And he's probably the second best player. But I don't think it's, like, guaranteed that they take him. I think it's the easy story. It's what everybody is going to assume. People have been talking about this as, like, preordained. But I don't know, man. There are other really good players at the top of this draft.
This is where I'm at with the draft. There are so many people that weigh in on these conversations. Like, your draft room is, like, 12 people. It's 12 people with, like, four college scouts, your front office executives, and your analytics team all working together. And somebody's going to have a really good argument that's never going to leave the room. The people that talk are not going to be like, yeah, we're definitely taking Lonzo. It's not going to happen. So it's just not guaranteed. It's just not. We didn't know who Minnesota was going to take. Like, I think Towns was definite, but the year with Wiggins, it wasn't. Like, it just wasn't for sure who they were going to take. They were leaning.
Yeah, I mean, that changed. Like, Flip Saunders' mind had to – actually, I don't know if that was – no, that was the Towns pick. He had to be talked out of Okafor.
Yeah.
But that happened. Like, yeah. That happened leading up to the draft. People knew that happened.
Yeah.
But that was a thing where, like, he had to be convinced. And maybe Magic and Pelinka have decided on Ball right now, but there's still a process.
Yeah.
And
– well, and the trade is
– there's also – I was just going to say.
The trade is –
there's another conversation about what happened with this trade and just how confident are they that they can just get Paul George with cap space.
Because
if it's – if you think the Celtics are going to try to get him, then maybe you just make the trade now.
So here's an idea for you, okay? Indiana – trades Paul George to the Lakers for the number 2 pick and whatever else. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
They take the number 2 pick. Wait, they can't deal. Can they deal the number 2 pick? Because their 2018 is owed.
I mean, they can draft Lonzo and trade him.
Right. So they trade Lonzo for Paul George, but they can't. But that wouldn't work in this situation because my idea was they trade for the pick. And then Indiana trades down. I like that idea a lot.
Like, to get multiple picks instead of just taking Lonzo?
Yeah. Like, trade down.
That would be a complicated thing to do on draft night, but it's possible.
Trade down with, like, Phoenix and pick up Eric Bledsoe.
I mean, you could trade down with Sacramento and get 5 and 10.
Yeah. And then take Jonathan Isaac.
I love Jonathan Isaac.
I know you do. And then take Jonathan Isaac and then have, like, yeah, that's what I would do. That's not a bad idea.
Like, what if you could get, like, Dennis Smith and Jonathan Isaac? I don't know if you can at 5'10". But, like, I don't, like, if the Kings can do that, that's incredible. But if the Pacers or some other team could, like, manage to snag that, like, if the Kings decide they want to trade up. Which I don't think they should do, but, like, let's say that happens. Like, that there are really interesting combinations there.
Hmm. Interesting. So the Celtics are going to take Fultz, and that's going to be awesome. And then they're going to have Fultz and Isaiah and Bradley and Smart and Rozier. Am I forgetting anybody?
You said. No, I mean that's about like Demetrius Jackson. Is he still kicking around somewhere?
Yeah, he is. In a half aborted post that I wrote yesterday, I got through half of the roster trying to rank all the Eastern Conference players before I realized it was 3 o'clock Eastern, and I was not going to get through it. Demetrius Jackson was a guy I talked about. So yeah, Demetrius Jackson. So. It's going to be an interesting year for the Celtics. This was obviously an unquestionable success. We talked about that already. Like, great year. Awesome. Everybody thinks that Fultz and Isaiah could play together. That's great. there's a reason that I know you love Isaiah, but there's a reason that people like Bill Simmons, who loves the Celtics and is pretty connected with their front office because he loves them so much, and that other people around the league are like, I don't know, they could wind up trading Isaiah. Like, there's a reason that the Isaiah talk.
Well, reason is that he's going to cost $200 million. It's like, this isn't complicated.
He's going to cost $40 million when he's 34.
It's tough, and I think part of it is like it's not just that they have faults. It's the whole construction of the roster. You know who would fit really great next to Markelle Fultz? Avery Bradley. Like, that's an incredible backcourt. And that's you don't have to really think about how it's going to work. And, like, I am of the mind that, like, Fultz and Isaiah can play together. Like, Fultz is a big athletic guy, and I don't think he needs to dominate the ball completely. But I do think there's a more snug fit, and that's Fultz and Bradley.
Yep.
So it's how much does it matter that the city of Boston has fallen head over heels for Isaiah Thomas, that he's the most popular player since Paul Pierce, and it's not close? How much does it matter that he's put up like franchise player numbers, won them a bunch of games in the clutch, completely taken control of their offense, and I mean that in a good way, and honestly gotten better in terms of making his teammates better and passing the ball and drawing attention and kicking it out and basically doing every possible thing the organization could have ever asked for since they acquired him. Like, it feels like, frankly, unfair that he could be this good and then the reward is, oh, you're actually too good and too expensive, so we're going to trade you. But that might end up being the reality.
And then there was a play last night where he drove on LeBron and LeBron just smacked the ball back in his face and then was like, no, I'm sorry. And it was just sad. Like, Isaiah caught it and was like, oh, I am small. Like, there was a lot of, oh.
That is in like, your head what he's thinking.
Like, there were a lot of, oh, Isaiah's small moments last night. There were a lot of those. And the Wizards should honestly be criticized for not taking advantage of that more. Like, they should be really punished.
I mean, that was when their offense was at their best. Like, aside from in transition, it was when they were just picking on him.
Yeah, just, like, dude, I would just, you know, they don't have another real creator on that team outside of, you know, Smart with a couple of ways. I would really just be like, no, every time we're just going to find Isaiah. We're just going to punish Isaiah every single time. It's reliable offense.
And they did it for stretches. They did it for stretches, but never.
Yeah. But so Fultz, you know, I think maybe this to me is kind of the best thing. It's like, look, you have until next summer to make the decision. So don't do the extension. Go through next season. See how the playoffs go.
Wait, you're skipping steps here. There's the whole summer. There's the Gordon Hayward pursuit. Yeah. There's the possible Butler or George trade. Like, there are a lot of things that could happen.
Yeah.
Like,
I wouldn't trade.
From a super pie in the sky idea, like, it is possible they clear space to get Gordon Hayward, then trade for Paul George, and they have both.
Yeah.
Like, that's not completely out of the question because of the assets that they have.
Yeah. And then you have Fultz, and then you re-sign Isaiah and Avery Bradley, and then you take the Cavs to, like, five games. And and that would be really great for you if you what was to happen.
It does change things if you have
if you have Gordon Hayward and Paul George to throw at LeBron, you've got something.
Yeah.
You know, like
I really think like one thing we're finding out like increasingly throughout these playoffs is like, okay, you get like Jay Crowder is a good wing defender and he can play power forward at times in the regular season. That's part of his value. But like he's not going to limit LeBron in any way. Like, he's just not. As valuable as that contract is, as much as, like, he should be appreciated for what he's turned into in Boston, like, it's just different if they have someone like Paul George. It is. It changes the entire way you can approach the team defensively. Because the Celtics went in last night, and the idea was, like, we don't really want to double, because they have all these shooters. And LeBron was like, okay, well, I'm just gonna get to the rim and score every time. And that's what he did. And if you have someone like Paul George, it doesn't mean Paul's going to, like, suddenly shut him down, but it's just different. It's just a different look.
You know who I actually think did okay in the lottery?
Who?
Sacramento.
Yeah.
They didn't lose the pick.
I mean, the picks swapped. Yeah, but they 5 and 10.
They didn't lose the pick, and it like would have been great for them to land in the top three if Philly had landed top three with them too. Sure, you know, but they're going to be in a position to draft De'Aaron Fox. Like, I think Fox is a great fit for them.
Yeah, I mean, Fox and Heald, like, that's sort of like a budget Wall and Beal, right?
Yeah, like, and, like, Josh Jackson could slip.
Yeah, it's possible.
Lonzo Ball could slip, and then we have Vivek versus LeVar.
Oh, my God. I don't know if you slipped in that far, but that would be something. If there's some sort of scandal involving the Big Baller Brand between now and then, maybe. Don't rule it out.
Don't rule it out. Guys, I want to tell you a little bit about SeatGeek, the smartest way to find tickets for all the games, concerts, events, whatever that you want to see live and up close this season. You want to be in the building for these incredible moments? You've got to be able to get there, and you can get there best with SeatGeek. I've got the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it is the best way to find tickets. So you can just, whenever you're at, if you're just like, oh, what is happening? Oh, I need to get tickets for that. Boom, pull out your phone, find the seats that you want to find. Get them right there. It's amazing. With SeatGeek, you always get the best deal on every ticket because they're going to price compare across multiple ticket sites for you. Those prices are going to vary depending on where you go. But SeatGeek is going to search them all and is going to find you the lowest available price. And SeatGeek wants to make sure that you get the most bang for your buck. That's why they're going to grade all of them. They're going to give you an evaluation of where that value falls. Like, you're not just going to buy these seats and so, well, they cost this one and this one cost this one. Okay, how good are those seats there in this range versus another one? And you can make sure that the seats that you're getting are the most awesome that you possibly can. Plus, every ticket that you buy on SeatGeek comes with a 100% guarantee so you can shop with confidence. Best of all, my listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. To get that rebate, here's all you gotta do. Download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, and click add a promo code. Enter promo code IEYE, and SeatGeek will send you $20 after you made your first purchase. Download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code I today. I was disappointed nobody else moved up. I always want chaos. We had no chaos. Like, the playoffs are defined by this. Like, just everything. This wasn't chalk because the Lakers moved up, and Phoenix moved down, but it felt very chalkish. I wish we had less chalk in this lottery.
It was, I mean, there were so many storylines, though. Like, I don't think most lotteries are as interesting as this. But, I mean, you're right. Like, it mostly, aside from the Lakers, went the way it was supposed to. But, I mean, there were things. Like, the pick swap happened. I think just the mere fact that the Celtics actually got the number one pick while they're playing in the conference finals is nuts. And something we can dissect a thousand ways and already kind of have. But yeah, I mean, the Lakers dynamic was like really funny. Like, just watching Embiid and Magic sit next to each other. Everything that happened there was like the best thing I've ever seen in the lottery.
Just gold.
Like, and Magic had so much on the line because it's not like, obviously they want the pick now, so they have more options and so they can do things quicker because they don't want this rebuild to go forever. And it sounds like they really want Ball. We'll see. But the other thing was that 2019 pick that they now don't have to give away. Like, they can give up 2 second-rounders instead. And you could just see on Magic's face, like, when he started dancing at his scene, it was like, this could have gone horribly wrong for them based on nothing more than luck. So yeah. I think it was a huge moment for them and an opportunity for people to say that there's a conspiracy, and that's always fun.
It's good to see a downtrodden franchise have something finally go right for it. Those poor Lakers.
Poor Lakers.
So Fultz will be on the team next year. You know, the thing I kind of keep saying is Magic Johnson was an outlier for a lot of reasons, that how great he was. Part of it was that he was ready to come in and compete in the NBA Finals his rookie season, and there hasn't really been a rookie like that since Magic that was ready for that, even Jordan. Nobody was really ready from the get-go to compete in the NBA Finals. You have to learn stuff. You have to get stronger. Magic was older. All of these things matter, and especially matters when you watch the Eastern Conference Finals Game 1 and you notice that the Celtics, well, it is a tremendous season. There's no doubt about it. Making the Conference Finals, it quits this entire season. It was a smashing success. There's a bit of a gap there.
Just a bit.
So, I guess here's the thing. If they win Game 2 in the same fashion in Boston, then yeah, I think we can say it. I'm willing to give the Celtics this game to say, look, you just got done playing Washington. It was a lot easier. This is a huge step up. You have to adjust. You're facing LeBron. They're all rested and healthy. You've been battling with Washington. You missed some shots that maybe you'll make next time. I remain unconvinced that you're going to hit every uncontested shot, like most of Celtics bloggers are. But you'll hit more, and maybe this will be more of a game. Like, I'm willing to give them this game and be like, this doesn't necessarily mean that the Celtics will pose no threat to the Cavs.
Doesn't necessarily, but I think it's the kind of thing where most neutral observers want to, like, see it before they believe it, right? Like, there were comments after the game last night that I thought were interesting from Boston's perspective, and
please share.
A lot of different people referenced that they played better in the second half, and like Stevens kept going back to, we can't start like that. Horford kept going back to, they can't start like that. And I'm kind of thinking, like, okay, but you did start like that, and that changed the complexion of everything. Like, there was never a moment where the Cavs were not in control. And I'm just not sure that it particularly mattered that they had a great, like, offensive third quarter, because there are so many areas that they need to do better at. And some of them, I'm just not sure what the answer is. Like, I don't know that they have the capability of suddenly keeping Tristan Thompson and Kevin Love off the boards. I don't think they suddenly have a better answer for LeBron. Maybe they start Jaylen Brown on him because he had a couple of good possessions, but you're asking a rookie to do that in the Eastern Conference Finals for more than a couple of possessions? That's a lot to ask. They may as well try, because what do you got to lose? But I don't know that that's a game changer. I don't know that playing Gerald Green and Kelly Olynyk more to space the floor, it has a cost, because LeBron can just get whatever matchup he wants. And that's what he does. He does not let you get away with anything. He does not let you hide anybody anywhere. And I think a big part of it was the Cavs defense was really good too. And like the Celtics offensive numbers by the end of the game, they looked a lot better, but just how they started and how they never looked comfortable, and how they weren't able to do the things that they normally do. Like that, you have to credit the Cavs for that. I guess from a Celtics perspective, you're kind of singing the same tune that the players and Stevens were singing last night, which is like, you take away that first quarter and it wasn't that bad. But I'm like, just watching the game, like, the first quarter was the story to me, and the first quarter showed how big the gap was. And the first quarter, honestly, like, going into the game, I think the people that were trying to be optimistic about the Celtics were like, this might be their best chance. The Cavs have been off for so long. The Celtics are going to have this insane crowd because they're in the conference finals again. They just got the number one pick, and the crowd is always great regardless. So Boston really needs to, like, start strong, come out with the energy, and it was just the opposite. It was like, it took them a while to get used to the fact that they weren't playing the Wizards anymore. And I think the fact that LeBron came out last night and then repeated again today that he didn't think he played that well, like, that is really telling to me. Like, the man was absolutely unstoppable at 38 points, and he was just like, I didn't feel good. I didn't feel like I was myself. I never feel good when I have that much rest. I was okay. It's just like, come on. Come on, man.
He was 1 of 6 from three-point land. Like,
that's true.
That's the problem. Is, you could say all you want about, like, well, we're going to hit shots next time, and it was just that quarter. The Cavs have a legitimate argument. Like, they're not, I don't think that they're just saying this to say it. Like, I really do believe that they actually look at their game and are like, no, we could play a lot better than that, because, you know, Kyrie had 11 points on 11 shots. The Cavs shot 11 of 31 from three-point range.
And if you take out Kevin Love 6 for 9, it's... like, it's ugly.
Mm-hmm. The Celtics ended up with more offensive rebounds than Cleveland did.
Yeah, but that's... I mean, sure. But I don't think that really captures what the Cavs were doing to them on the boards early. But, yes.
They were even in second chance points. They only outscored Boston by 2 in the paint.
Mm-hmm.
The Celtics were sloppy with turnovers. That was a problem. But I just think you look at it and you're just like, no, like they could definitely play better. They could definitely play better. This LeBron,
I thought,
this version of LeBron is funny to me. Like, there's such a sense from him, and it's at once endearing. It's like fake nice is kind of how I feel about it. Where there's this real sense from him of like he's helping guys up off the floor. Like, last night, two of them went down in a heap, and, like, he helped two of the Celtics pull another Celtic up off the floor and, like, give him a butt slap. But is, like, telling Jaylen, like, you can just tell with Jaylen Brown, he's like, oh, where'd he go? Like, good job! Like he did with Norman Powell when he was like, no, you're gonna get a violation. Like, the fact that he could be so magnanimous, and it doesn't...
Yeah.
Like he gets to be magnanimous. Like, he could just be like, hey, good try. Hey, good effort there. That was you really forced me into a bad shot there. That was really great. Good job. Like,
It's like being condescending as hell while, yes, like, technically not doing anything but, yes, being nice.
Like,
he would not do that, like, as a member of the Heat playing the Spurs in the finals. No, he wouldn't. He will not do that to the Warriors.
No.
Like, that won't happen.
No.
And I think it is funny, and I think his whole approach... Honestly, like, I think when he is saying, like, we could be better, I don't think it's BS. Like, I seriously think he's focused on the Warriors, even though he won't say it, and he wants the team to be as close to perfect as possible, and he wants himself to be that, too. And, like, he specifically mentioned today, we can't let things happen, like when Isaiah Thomas got that three-pointer at the end of the half. We can't let Avery Bradley get those backdoor cuts that result in open layups. And that happened a couple of times. And the Isaiah Thomas three did stand out. And I just think, like, it's everybody is in tune with what the defensive game plan is, and it's really impressive. Like, before the game yesterday, Tyronn Lue was talking about Isaiah and saying, like, you know, he's going to score. He's going to attack, but we can't let him walk into threes off the dribble. And we can't let him parade to the foul line over and over. And then here we are the next day with LeBron specifically bringing up, like, the one time that Isaiah was free to walk into a three-pointer when the team was down by 20, and he cut it to 17. And that is on the Cavs' mind, because they'd probably just watched the film and pointed that stuff out.
He was mad about the third quarter. He mentioned it post-game. He was like, we had some lapses in the third quarter we can't have. And I was just like...
Yep. And it's like, well, actually, you can have them because you are already winning by so much and you can take control of the game whenever you want to. But, like, his standard is just on another level. Like, they don't want to just beat teams by a couple of points anymore. They don't want to win series in 5 or 6 games. They want to completely demoralize you. They want to take your self-belief away, and they want to sweep you and get rest and prepare for the Warriors. That's what they've been doing the whole time.
Well, and they have to, because the Warriors just beat the Spurs by 40. Like,
yeah,
they have to.
What are we gonna do for the week where there's no basketball? If these are 2 sweeps, this is gonna be really weird.
We're just gonna, like, I'm writing. I've already plotted out, like, 7 preview materials and free agency and a whole bunch of stuff. And I'm probably gonna go back and
draft research, man. We need to do draft research.
I'm gonna go back and update all the columns I wrote last year in anticipation of the Warriors winning, and just update those.
Change the dates.
Change
Harrison Barnes' name to Kevin Durant. Change Bogut's to Pachulia.
Tweak a couple of things. I got my Steph Curry. What does 2 titles mean for him? I got that column all ready to go. I thought it was a good column, too. I was excited to publish it. That did not happen. I think I have ideas, and no one's going to like them, but I really do believe in them.
What?
They should bring Isaiah off the bench. I'm not kidding. I'm dead serious about this. LeBron's only going to rest like 4 minutes in the series, because their gambit is he could play 44 minutes if he gets a week off to rest. And that's fine. Regardless of how you feel about it or what the science says, that's not what they're going to do. It's not about LeBron. It's a problem. It's about... At least the bench units have Deron Williams. at least the bench units have Kyle Korver. At least the bench unit have some guys that you would feel better about. The bigger thing is getting Isaiah away from Tristan Thompson. So if you start smart, okay, you start smart and you say, our entire objective is to get through the first 7 minutes of this game with it being single digits. That's the plan. Is we're just not going to let the Cavaliers run all over us in the first 7 minutes. Then you bring in Isaiah, and the bench units have been great. Bear in mind, the starting unit for the Bulls and the starting unit for the Wizards had huge advantages for much of their series versus the Celtics starters. The Celtics starters have not been great. Like, they just haven't been.
They also don't have a five. Like, they have four starters, and they keep rotating.
Right. So bring Isaiah off the bench and try and do damage. Now, if LeBron just decides to check him, I will say this. Isaiah did some weird stuff last night. Like, they all did. Like, they would wind up in isolation situations versus LeBron, and they went at him three times in the third quarter. And I was like, what are you doing?
Go stand in the corner.
Yes! Like, LeBrisolate that guy. Put him in the corner! Get him as far away from the action as possible. Because if Isaiah's out there to start the game, I get it. You're like, we can't score without him. But you know that you can, because you've done it before. The bench units have found ways to score. And Marcus Smart does stuff. And the other thing is, if you're going to win, I feel the same way about the Raptors thing, you're not going to win a shootout with them. You're not. It doesn't matter how many shooters you bring. They have LeBron and Kyrie Irving and Kyle Korver and Kevin Love and Channing Frye and other guys. They have all these guys. They have more weapons than you. Try and make it into a defensive game. Try and grind this down. Have Smart annoy him. I would also try Avery Bradley on him. Avery Bradley's the only guy that didn't get a chance on him last night. Did you know that?
Yes. Yeah, but it's because he's so small.
They had Isaiah guarding him.
Not on purpose.
Okay, I will say this. If Isaiah gets switched on to LeBron, just blitz, okay? Just panic. Like, in that situation, yeah, you are doomed. But, like, I actually feel like Bradley might be a good option. And the reason I say this is LeBron is scared of picking up offensive fouls. And pity fouls in this league are a huge problem that the league needs to address. Like, the three-point foul is a huge one coming off the screen. The pass and crash is a big one that they need to address. And the other one is pity fouls, which is guy is smaller, so he gets a call because the other guy makes any sort of physical move. Happens all the time. LaMarcus Aldridge admitted that he was freaked out by James Harden guarding him because he was worried about offensive fouls. LeBron said the same thing. He has said the same thing about being guarded by smaller guys. When they've asked him, like, why don't you take him into the post? He says, I'm worried about the offensive foul. If I make any sort of contact with them and they fall, the ref goes for it every single time. So you have Bradley do that. And he just...
Ironically, one of the league's biggest floppers, Marcus Smart, and LeBron just backs him down, shoots over him yesterday.
Right. Which is, yeah. That's
he didn't care. Smart. That was his mentality.
Smart needs to flop a lot more in that situation and maybe not so much in every other situation in which he is on the floor anywhere. That one last night in the backcourt was really bad. I was like, come on. How do you fall for this?
I loved the sheer audacity of it. Like, he pounds the floor afterward and the crowd goes nuts. Like, it's just great.
So I would try Avery Bradley. I would bring Isaiah Thomas off the bench. And you're still going to play Isaiah 40 minutes. I'm just saying, try and establish a different tone.
I think, honestly, like, I see what you're saying. I think I'd rather just cut his minutes than not start him. I wouldn't want to do anything to take away his confidence. I wouldn't want the players to feel like you were deviating from what they've been all year. But I do think, like, if he's on the floor and they start to score on, like, four or five possessions in a row and they're just targeting him, like, if that's really becoming a problem, then I think you got to take him out. And you got to then kind of have, like, this is where, like, you have to have feel as a coach, right? Like, you have to be able to balance everything and see how you're doing without Isaiah. Like, do you go on a run? They went on a bit of a run without him yesterday. And I think it's going to be the natural tendency to play him as normal minutes, to play him a ton of minutes because of what he does offensively and how good he is at drawing multiple defenders. But, I mean, at a certain point, they can't let the Cavs be, like, that amazing offensively and just pick on him. So, to me, that's the bigger issue than, like, starting with him at the bench. I look at the minutes, and I look at, like, how fast your hook is when he's being exploited.
Yeah, it's tough. This is going to be a thing. I mean, maybe if they get Gordon Hayward and Paul George next year, it won't be a thing. But, you know, if you ask why I've been so skeptical about the Celtics, I feel better if they had a rim protector, which is weird because I've long advocated. I'm like, Al Horford's a five, and he's a good five, and he is. He's a great five. But they need a little bit more rim protection. And then on the other end of
it'd be nice if they just had, like, instead of Tyler Zeller, they had, like, Dwayne Dedmon or something, yeah. Right? Like, you're not even talking – like, they don't need, like, a top-flight, like,
DeAndre,
star.
They don't need DeAndre Jordan. Like, although
– if you just have somebody who can come in and be that guy for part of the game, then that helps.
Although, okay, let's say that Paul George won't commit to re-signing with Boston and the Bulls won't go for Jimmy Butler because they're the Bulls, okay? And then Chris Paul and Blake Griffin both leave the Clippers. You with me so far?
I'm with you.
What if you trade the 2018 Nets pick for DeAndre Jordan?
I think it devalues Horford. But if you're talking about moving Horford somewhere else, then, like, I'm interested.
I mean,
I'm just imagining Isaiah, or even Fultz, like, just one of those guys running pick and rolls with DeAndre. Like, that's very interesting to me.
If Horford's a stretch five now, which he basically is, right? Like, that's what, mm-hmm. and, like, he's taking a lot of threes now. You made it work when it was Amir, and Amir's not spacing anymore. Like, Amir used to be a really surprisingly decent 3-point shooter. But Amir's not that guy anymore. Amir, by the way, needed his rotation is he got bolted after 4 minutes. I think it was a mistake to drop him out entirely. The Celtics had a lot of success against LeBron back in between 2008 and 2012, and everyone says, you know, KG and Pierce, and yes, you're absolutely right. But the other thing is, do you know who's really important for their defensive scheme against LeBron in those series?
Who?
Big Baby Davis.
Big Baby.
Because of one thing in particular, okay? Glenn Davis was not a great NBA player and did not do a lot of things well. But one thing that Davis did really well was when LeBron gets to that middle spot where he can go left or right, Davis would come in and take the charge. And if you do mm-hmm. that, if you present yourself and you're able to make that rotation and you get in his way enough to take that charge, that really messes with his ability to hit layups, and it frustrated the hell out of him. Amir, though, like, half committed, and then LeBron just went to the other side. Part of it is LeBron's, like, a much better player than he was in 2010, because, like, instead of, oh, I'm going to go entirely to the right or the left, now he sees you and he just moves to the other side and does a switch hand, underhand scoop off the glass layup, which is insane, but something that he can do. But you still rather him having taken those shots. Like, if Amir can clean up his rotations a bit, I still think he could be helpful. But anyway, so that's, like, an idea.
LeBron hit a layup last night in between two defenders in the first quarter. It was in – I wrote two things last night. It was in the second thing that I wrote. And it just looked so easy for him.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that he went, like, crashing down to the floor afterward. It was just like, yeah, this is obviously what you do in this situation. You just switch hands in the air, put it in with your left off the glass, and then you go the other way.
I think my favorite was the when he drove left and he put it up right in front of the rim and didn't even use the glass and just, like, spun it off of his wrist, essentially.
That yeah, and then he looked at his hand afterward like, I've been touched by God.
And it's hard to argue. Western Conference Finals Game 2 is Saturday, or Game 3 is Saturday. It is obviously, it is very, very obviously high noon for San Antonio. This is it. This is their last stand. And if Kawhi's not playing, that's it. If Kawhi's not playing, they have no chance. They may not have a chance anyway. If Kawhi plays...
Especially he's questionable still, right?
Yes, he is still questionable.
That is better than doubtful.
Right?
Just without him, I expect more of the same. Even if LaMarcus plays better, even if the Spurs are, in general, better at executing and more confident and all of that. Like, I don't really want to watch the Kawhi-less Spurs against the Warriors again. Like, I just want him back, please.
Yeah. You know who I'm mad at?
Zaza?
The Rockets. I'm really mad at the Rockets.
You should be mad at the Wizards, too, then.
I am mad at the Wizards. You were all aboard the Wizards train. I'll say it. I still think the Wizards were a better team. I'm not a guy that doubles down. I'm just not. Like, I've been wrong plenty of times, and I'll continue to be wrong about things, right? Like, I'm willing to own it when I am. But it was a game seven. Al Horford shot 58% from three, and Kelly Olynyk had the game of his life. The Celtics deserved to go to the Eastern Conference Finals. But a lot of things went their way. And that's fine. That's sports. That's okay. But I'm not entirely committed. And, like, if you want to say, like, you really think the Wizards are going to do better than the Celtics versus the Cavs, maybe not. Like, that's fair. Like, maybe not. Maybe
we don't,
like,
know.
Like, no way. But I would have liked to have seen it. Because at least now, like, we know for sure that the Celtics and the Spurs, especially with that. But you could say, like, with the Spurs, hey, they were up in the first quarter with Kawhi. So if he comes back and they've got that great crowd behind him, maybe it'll go their way.
I mean, that's the thing that sucks is that, like, we'll truly never know. Yeah. But the fact that the Spurs – look, and it's not just how they played in that game. It's, like, how they've played in the playoffs. It's, like, what they did against the Rockets after starting the series so poorly. It seemed like they were close, or maybe they had just become, like, a fully realized version of the Spurs. Like, it just seemed like they were doing everything – the way they were supposed to. And that was probably the best half of basketball they played all year. And then it's over. It's just done like that. And now it feels like they have no shot. And that's what's unfortunate, is, like, a lot of people weren't that excited about the conference finals. Like, and that's fair, because the Warriors have just been so much better than everyone. But there was a brief moment where it was like, oh, this could actually be great. And now that's gone.
And it's gone.
It's just done.
And it's gone. Yeah. Cavs Warriors better be good. I mean, I'm okay with it. Like, my depression level was highest last year when I was just like, everything just feels predetermined. And now I'm like, it's okay. I'm excited about the summer. The summer's going to be fun. It's going to be a good draft. Paul George could get traded. Teams have got some cap money. Somebody's going to do something stupid. I'm going to go hiking. It's going to be great. I'm excited for the summer. Which is not.
I think there's a difference between nothing matters and nothing matters.
Yeah.
And I'm true. In the latter part, the latter camp. Like, it's just like, all right, sure. See what happens. Doesn't matter. Like, we're going to watch the finals. We're going to see some great players. Maybe it'll be historic and crazy, and the Cavs will still be able to execute the same basic game plan they had last year, despite the fact that Kevin Durant's on the team now. Maybe the Warriors will just smoke them, because this is an absolutely insane collection of talent they have. I personally am really excited to see what happens, and it would be nice if there were close games, but if they're not, then all right, cool. Like, it was still a good season.
How many years would it take for you to get tired of it?
I mean, it's not even a matter of, like, whether I'm tired. Like, I just...
No, I'm asking you personally. Like, I know you'll... Like, we'll cover the season regardless. Like, we're still writing analysis off of these games, and we're still putting in the effort.
I don't know how to answer it, because I don't even really think of it in those terms. Like, I don't think the NBA, like, owes me a, like, close competitive series or, like, parody... or doubt about where things are going to end up. Like, I just, like, what we have is what we have. And
saying that they don't owe it to us, like, you don't have a personal, you're never just like, man, I wish this was better.
Oh, I mean, yeah, like, of course, like, watching the Jazz series, I was just like, oh, God, like, cool. Like, I'd like to switch to another game now. But that's the extent of it. Like, I don't really hold on to that. It's more just in the course of, like, you're watching a game and you're like, A, like, what the hell am I supposed to write about this? Because it's just another blowout. And B, like, you're sort of rooting for the team that's losing to make it interesting. But like that's as far as it goes. Like I'm not into this whole like, and we've talked about it before. Like I'm not into this whole like, how do we fix this problem? Like I don't really see it as a problem.
I think that you were, much like with Kyle Lowry on All-NBA, I think you're in a vast minority. I think that most people I'm getting pretty constant questions on radio calls about what does this say for the league? How do we fix this? What do we do? Like the NBA playoffs are not competitive. Please send help. Like that's the general sense of it. And I think that that's, you know, as much as uneducated or not uneducated, uninformed fans make up a huge portion, and you could say like, well, they were, you know, that's just not how it is. Well, that's okay, but I think people still need to be able to enjoy it. Like the sport should still be enjoyable for people, and you shouldn't have to be like, but the beauty and the grace and the brilliance, the perfection of basketball. You shouldn't have to be that much. You should be like, no, I want to like, I just got off of work. I want to drink a beer and watch like a really good close basketball game between two good teams. I think that's a reasonable expectation for fans to have.
That's possible in the finals. I think that's possible.
Well, okay, but I said this morning on a radio call. I said, let's say the finals are great. The NBA season is 8 months long. Like, we're really going to do 7 months of stuff for one series that's going to be interesting? That's what we're doing?
You don't think any of the series that have happened so far have been interesting? That's where I think we get lost. Is like, I think, like, the series that those two teams were in have not been very interesting. The other ones were fine. Regular season was really good.
Like I like covering Spurs Rockets, but I wouldn't necessarily say that I would not count it as a great series.
You're not great. I wouldn't say bad.
Well, I mean, what series has been like? Would you say that the Celtics?
I mean, Celtics Wizards I thought was good.
Good-ish. Like that's about the bar that we're at.
It was a 7-game series. Yes. The weird thing was like there were so many blowouts in this series. Yeah.
That's part of it too.
So it was not your traditional 7-game.
Yeah, and that's something that you can't control. Like you can't control if they're just blowouts. Like you just can't.
Right.
Like you can't. You cannot.
Determine. And even Spurs Rockets was like that.
Yeah, exactly. So like you just can't determine it. However, there is. I will say that there's a giant elephant in the room, which is the difference between this year and last year.
What do you mean?
The difference between this year and last year in terms of the playoffs being really captivating is Kevin Durant's on the Warriors. Because when Kevin Durant was on the Thunder, you had Thunder Spurs, which was an amazing series. Like, one of the highlights of my career was covering that series. I enjoyed that series as much as I enjoyed covering the 2013 finals.
Yeah, and you had Thunder Warriors.
And then you had Thunder Warriors. Like, it was amazing. Everything was great when Kevin Durant was on the Thunder. And now we've got no hope. Now we've got no hope, no change, no jobs. Thanks, Adam Silver.
There's a certain song involving Kevin Durant that I would sing if it wasn't going to be bleeped out. But I feel like that's the general perspective that you're opining on right now.
Well, that's Bad Boy James Herbert. I'm Matt Moore. You can find me at Matt Moore CBS.
I'm referring to the Lil B song that's entitled Something KD.
Or at HP Basketball. You can find him at Outside the NBA. James is in Boston covering the Eastern Conference Finals and providing great coverage, even if the games aren't competitive. You're still documenting what is an incredible run by the Cavaliers and a great season by the Celtics. I've got top 40 free agents up. I'm going to be writing on Paul George's situation. I'm going to be writing on Jimmy Butler's situation. I'm writing a bunch of stuff on offseason stuff. Make sure to check out all of that content on CBSSports.com. Until next time, this has been the CBS Sports Basketball Podcast. Thanks for listening, and thank you, James.
Thank you, Matt.